Welcome to Vice or Virtue, an Eggy pod where Eggy fans talk about Eggy jams. My name is Justin Bruce. I live in Las Vegas. Thanks for joining us for episode 3. I'm happy to have a new friend of mine from the Mastodon world, Brian Wolf, as our guest. Brian, welcome to Vice or Virtue. How the heck are you today?
I'm doing great. How are you?
I'm good,
really,
man.
An honor to be here. First podcast that I've ever been on, so that's super nice.
That's great.
We've been talking before, a little nervous, but...
You will be great, and you are someone who I just purely connected with in our little Mastodon nerdy lunch table of the internet. You have a real true love of Eggy, and I feel like a pretty deep knowledge of the band. How did you get into Eggy? How long have you been a fan? Does it vibe with the other kind of music that you listen to? Let's hear it.
Yeah. As far as the other kind of music that I listened to, on a different path than most jam band people had, it was after college, which that was, you know, 06, 08. So there was no Phish touring at that time. And everybody was kind of looking at their own different avenues or where are we going to go next? And my group of friends that did listen to Phish kind of gravitated toward Umphrey's McGee. So when they started listening to that and hanging out with them, like, oh, what is that? And just really fell in love with the music, started going to shows with them, and just grew from there. So then followed it that with, of course, Phish and Grateful Dead and Mo, all the other guys that are out there too. But as far as just Eggy specifically, it was really during the pandemic, got a new job, switched to a desk position. There weren't that many new shows coming out, so I was looking for something different and just stumbled on Eggy. I don't know. It's kind of really hooked. They used to do this little opening called Checking My Mic, where it was just like a big vocal harmony at the very beginning that they did to open the show. And that just really stuck with me. I've always liked the harmonies as far as how they pull those off so well.
It's our favorite set opener.
Note it.
We're going to talk about 5 shows. The most recent Midwest run. The first 5 shows from tour. And that's going to take us from Columbus on Valentine's Day to Ann Arbor to Lexington to Covington to Indianapolis. And Brian, you attended the Indianapolis show, so we'll get in to what it was like to be there in good time. But because we're going through 5 shows here and we're going to try to keep this to about an hour, I decided, you had your list of keeper jams, I had my list of keeper jams, just stacked them up, and whichever ones we both hit on, those are the jams that we're going to talk about. Big shout out and thank you to Dan Robb from 1111 Management, the band's manager, for hooking me up with soundboard recordings for the jams so we can help people, you know, really hear what we heard when we were listening to the shows. As we record this, the band has wrapped up their jam cruise, little jaunt, and they are going to be heading in mid to late March. I think they've got 6 shows dialed up, mainly in the Northeast. So that is where we are as of recording. But if I had to describe these shows, the 5 Midwest shows, in one word, I would say comfortable. And I don't mean that in a mailing it in lazy kind of a way. I mean it in a confident way. There didn't feel like there was any time needing to adjust back to being on the road. I think the fact that the band was dusting off a couple of old tunes across some of these shows just gave me the sense that they were really, really kind of comfortable in their own skin and trying new things, but not reinventing the wheel, but have a lot of different kinds of jamming highlights for us to get through. Brian, if you had to describe these 5 Midwest shows in one word, how would you do it?
I mean, honestly, I wouldn't say one word. I would put it maybe one person, but Donnie was killing it for me this entire set. I mean, Indy was amazing. But every time I was going through my notes, it just felt like somehow a focus was always coming back to him. Just doing great on lyrics and the songs. And I guess maybe he made some of the set lists. I'm not quite sure, because Indy was really geared toward him with, 12 Pounds of Pain, looking at Coming Up, Let It Rock, Tom Cornwalker at the very end.
Shout out to Donnie Batat for being the man on the keyboards who makes it happen. All right, let's get into it, Brian. We're going to start off in Columbus, Ohio on Valentine's Day. I thought the 12 Pounds of Pain that went into Crosstown Traffic and back into 12 Pounds of Pain that wrapped up set one was awesome. But what we're going to focus on is the Finding and Losing. Do you have any thoughts about that? That was in the two slot of the second set in Columbus.
Yep.
How did you feel about that?
Finding and Losing was really good. It just has really flowing playing between Jake and Donnie again. Jake just transitions. He had a real circular flow to it. It was nice and smooth. Jake had a little solo there with Alex on the little Laurel cowbell that we love, but we haven't really heard yet. And then he also kind of prefaced for us some teases in there with Hungry Like the Wolf as well that was coming up that we'll discuss here in a bit too.
Yeah, I love how Donnie helps the jam kind of get out via his synths. And this jam, Finding and Losing, has that like democratic kind of sprawl where to me it feels like the jam kind of just oozes out sideways to develop as opposed to like trying to go one way or the other. I thought that the way that Jake and Mike and Alex kind of built some tension before they get in to like a near peak before 12 minutes was really cool. And then you had noted after 13 minutes, bam, it's the real deal peak. And I thought it was nice that it was not overt, not kind of like a white lights sort of fish bright kind of peak, but really kind of mature and kind of patient. In general, I thought that this Columbus show was real strong. And I think the fact that we had three jams that we like felt we had to talk about that overlapped is a testament to that. So yeah, that was Finding and Losing. As far as Hungry Like the Wolf, man, I've heard the song, of course, Child of the 80s, very familiar with it, but it was never a song that like really spoke to me all that much. Yeah. How do you feel about that song? Or is it strictly like, oh, like I love the eggy version, I could leave the real version behind?
I mean, yeah, of course I'd love the eggy version, but yeah, it's just always been a song that's kind of there. Reminds me of kind of Grand Theft Auto, Vice City, being on the soundtrack. We went to the movies last night and they actually were playing it in the movie theater before we went and saw Dune. So it was kind of funny. It was like, oh, you know, it's all kismet to coming back and recording this today. So
that's funny.
Always ties it together.
I didn't realize that Eggy had, they played it once before, but this was new for me to hear last time. Gosh, well, the last time they had played it was in September of 2022. So it's been a minute. I thought that Alex's vocals were like right on point and almost, I don't know if it was just his voice or like the effects or what the deal was, but it really felt like it had that 80s vibe that's kind of like a little synthy, a little digitized, but not overly so. I also thought that, of course, you know, it was an Alex little tight groove clinic. And I know that in your notes, you know, you have mentioned Donnie and Alex, like the best dance band in all of the jam band world. What do you think about that?
About 5 minutes, 30 seconds into it, you know, they do have just his keys and just a dance groove going up just about till about 7 minutes there. So.
When Jake is kind of going from like bluesy, he's in a bluesy space, but then kind of turns over to more of a crunchy feel around 7:30, I thought that was notable. My ears just heard a Van Halen-esque kind of guitar peak spilling over as they get back to the chorus around 12 minutes. And I just thought it was filthy in the best possible way. But, oh, so, so good. Like I alluded to earlier, for a song that I don't necessarily love, I thought that this for me was far and away the highlight of the whole show.
At about the minute 8 point, they kind of go into, to me, what sounded like more of a Umphrey style jam too. It was just a little bit darker and just had a sound that really reminisced to that.
The last highlight that we both loved was Buying Time. What did you think about that one, Brian?
Jake just had a really heavy walk at the beginning. And again, Donnie with the keyboard section that to me should have been louder in the mix with what he was doing back there. Thank you. really goes into like a calm, flying high Jake solo that pulls back into the beginning of the song, or just back into the final song section there.
Yeah, I'm with you, because I think right there is when I heard Jake's guitar really singing out, and Alex, the cymbal master, his work from like 12:30 to 13:30-ish, I thought it was just really on point. Jam kind of simmers down to nothing by 20 minutes, and we just get a full-fledged drum solo for a couple of minutes before they wrap the song. So yeah, I thought Buying Time was great.
I was gonna say, it sounded like to me that he's gonna go into Cherub Rock. He just had that before he started that solo, just that quick little drum snare that's the beginning of that song. It's like, oh, it sounds like it could be that, but who ever knows what they could go into next. They just finished it out, and he did have a super strong solo at the end there as well, which is always fun to see somebody from the band or anybody from the band just show off on their own.
I'm going to definitely have to listen for that Cherub Rock as a kid of the 90s, you know, as far as when my music tastes were being formed. If that happened, I'm definitely going to hear it when I go back. One thing that I real quickly wanted to shout out was the Mr. Domino bust out and the Taka and Lucy, probably call that a bust out as well. It's only been played 5 times, debuted back in 2016. Man, those are 2 songs that really, really hit me. I think I was singing the chorus from Taka and Lucy in my head after listening to this show for like 2 weeks, to a point where I was starting to question my own mental sanity. It was just the most beautiful song. I don't know what it's about, but the imagery is just gorgeous. So not going to include any clips from it, but man, well played. I hope to hear more Taka and Lucy going forward.
I've never even heard that song. I'm ashamed to admit. I wasn't even aware of of his existence. I was on kind of flipping on Facebook and between in the group there to see what anybody had any updates and looking for maybe a live stream. And somebody put on there saying Taka and Lucy bust out. And I was like, what song is that? You know, is it a cover? Was it original? But yeah, it's original. That looks like it was last time played was April 13th, 2022. So
yeah. So it was new to me as well, because I wasn't listening back in 2022. So I had the same experience that you did. What a great beginning show to this little Midwest run. This is probably one of the stronger shows of the 5 that we're going to talk about, in my opinion. But let's head up to Ann Arbor, Michigan. And as a Penn State alum, I'm contractually obligated to say Michigan sucks. But this Aggie show in Ann Arbor was pretty great. I think our first collective highlight was Sweat Equity. Is there a song that has put in more work? I mean, that's what the song is all about, but man, talk about a jam vehicle ever since its inception last summer or early last fall, whenever it was debuted. But what did you think about the Sweat Equity, Brian?
I mean, it's everybody's favorite song about mushroom soup. You know, I mean, how many people have that one? So it just started off with just as the extension of Sweat Equity itself. It was very bluesy, kind of like a lounge sound that really held on that 3-beat count from Alex. And then again, like I said at the beginning, Donnie has his piano highlights, and he's really letting loose there as a combination with Jake's solo. And it's just, again, testament to Eggie how they can both share that same space, and it's not crowded or one person's dominating over the other one. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's really well said how, you know, the four of them come together and the sound isn't crowded. Your ears can follow along with what each of the four members is doing. I loved how it gets peaky around 11:30 and then again at around 12 minutes, but it's committed to the groove the whole time. These mini peaks are almost like waves on the shore that just kind of keep lapping over and over, and that keeps happening through about 13 minutes. I do want to say Sweat Equity has gone in a handful of different directions. It's not like it's ever bottled up into one specific kind of jam type. They're always able to break it from its shell and kind of go in different directions. So yeah, that's a good one. I do also want to mention that right after Sweat Equity, we're not going to include clips here, but as a Casey Musgraves fan, the cover of Oh What a World, whew, 10 out of 10, boys. No notes at all. Like, fantastic. I saw the set list. I could not wait for the soundboards to hit Nug so I could finally, you know, hear it. I heard the clip on Instagram that they uploaded, but that was great. I also thought that the shadow that wrap set one was really, really nice. But our next collective highlight was the set two opener, Figure It Out. And what did you think about that one?
On that, for just Jake was just really floating, playing. It was like soft, high in the sky. Mike was backing him up, and just both perfectly matched. Mike's bass then kind of gets into like a full sounding. I put a gloopy effect. I'm not quite sure what it is, but just kind of, it's more wet, kind of bouncy with it as well.
I thought how the jam collectively kind of rose, as you mentioned. That's like a little peak around 9:40, another one at 10:10. Jake gets real lyrical, does the Hungry Like a Wolf tease you mentioned, with more waves of peaks that follow. It finally resolves around 12 minutes. Just intensely enjoyable stretch of music there. I'm the kind of listener where when I hear those mini peaks that happen again and again and again, as opposed to one singular kind of like, this is it, ah, I just find those like waves of peaks pretty satisfying. So yeah, I was feeling it on Figure It Out. You had mentioned on your list, Hucks With It. We just got some clarification from the band about Hucks versus Hucks With It. Can you enlighten us as to what the band told you via Instagram? They were answering questions.
Well, actually, I think it was the first guest Al had asked that, because it wasn't from me.
Okay.
Yeah, I just replied back saying that we got an answer, but I believe that Al is the one that put it up there.
Thank you for your service, Al.
To us. I know, and he just keeps on giving. But what we were told was Hux is just a standard version, and then Hux with it is a more jammed out version, which was one of the guesses that we had whenever we thought it was, we're trying to figure it out ourselves.
It's nice to have confirmation, though.
I just didn't know if it was it started out as Hux, they added Hux with it, because then we also found in some of the set lists that it was just asterisk on there as a footnote, you know, say Hux, asterisk, foot with it. So we finally have our answer.
Right, yes. Well, that was a highlight for you. And then to finish off set two, I thought the Boomer Bus, which of course is where this podcast gets its name, I thought that was real strong. But the sweat equity and the figure it out is what we really wanted to hone in on, just in the spirit of keeping this timely.
I was going to say back at the Hux on that side too, I even messaged you about this, and maybe someone else can go out there and listen to it as well. But like at 3 minutes and 50 seconds, I swore that Jake said Theo Cosby.
Right, because the original line is sort of like the cause and effect or something to that end. And yeah, you messaged me and says, am I crazy? And I listened to it and I'll be damned, sound like Theo Cosby to me.
Yeah, the real cause behind the effect. And it sounded like the Theo Cosby. I swear it still does now that it's stuck. I mean, yeah, Jake can come back and tell me I'm totally wrong. But yeah, right. It really made me laugh on that. That's the stuff that I love about just jam bands and these guys in particular, hiding little things in there for us to always hear and listen to.
Yeah, little Easter eggs for sure. Let's take our Easter egg basket and go, I guess, down south to northern Kentucky, Lexington. Wait, yeah, Lexington's in northern Kentucky, yep. Right? Okay, just checking. I was thinking of Covington for a second, getting a show ahead of myself. But you and I got introduced to a new band. I like to think my musical tastes are hip. But there's a limit to my hipness. So I had never heard of the Unknown Mortal Orchestra before.
No, and that was, yep, same here.
Yeah, so thanks, Aggie, for hipping me to a cool new band. As soon as I figured out, just because of the set list notes, this was a cover I was listening before work at 2 a.m, I was like, let me hear the original version real quick on Spotify, and then I'll go back and get Aggie's take. And having done that, oh, they nailed it. They really nailed it, and then they were able to take it for a little bit of a walk. How did you feel about this jam?
Again, just brings out for Donnie's organ extension of that song, and just a overall organized Eggie jam. Of course, Alex had a real marching snare, and it got darker towards the end of it with a big Jake command and a great drop back into the song. It didn't have anything like a lead up to it. It just popped right back into it. And I always think that's crazy how bands can get that timing down that well to just enter right back into where you're at and finish it up strong.
They're a well-oiled machine. I'm with you, though. I definitely heard that kind of handoff from Donnie's clav jam over toward Alex, and I had written down more of like a New Orleans reminiscent sort of drum section there and piano section.
Yeah, I put down marching snare.
Sounds like we're thinking about the same exact sound. You know what? We're making good time. Let's keep on trucking. Let's head to Covington, Kentucky, which is what, just across the river from Cincinnati, Ohio.
Yep.
My geography checks out. This was the show that contained my favorite jam from these five shows. I thought that You Can Call Me Al, which I've heard them cover before, but I thought that it was stunning. And the way that the jam took a surprising turn at the end and kind of got into an emotive sort of mode, just really, because I was surprised and didn't see it coming, really hit me and really kind of grabbed me by the feels. But before we get there, what did you think of the earlier parts of You Can Call Me yeah. Al? And how do you feel about the song in general? I mean, I remember watching the video on VH1 with Chevy Chase way back yeah. in the day.
Yeah. I've always liked the song too. But as far as just in the jamming and the playing and things like that, like Jake's had a real plucky section at the very beginning, joined up by Donnie's playing there, and then Jake's tone changes over to that. I believe it was Al that was it like the bleep, bleep, bloop, bloop?
Yes, yes, a technical term there.
A technical term that we're just going to keep using because I know nothing about effects. So, and then that just raised the pitch until about 8 minutes.
You're right after the bloop bleeps around 6 minutes and 20 seconds, as which are balanced really lovely in a really lovely way by Donnie's keys. And it's like they're in clean tones after 8 minutes and it's active, yet understated mic as the groove opens up with lots of great Alex cymbal crashes around 10:30. Jake's really singing out. There's this Jake lick that kind of like gives the whole jam some direction, and the band gels onto it, and it morphs into this cool bass led figure from Mike around 1630, and it's like this maelstrom that keeps going for a minute. But then there's that downshift into that peaceful passage, and per my notes, glorious, beautiful interplay between Jake and Alex and Mike with great Donnie support. It's like an amazing 4.5 minutes. It'll really take you somewhere and transport you into a higher, more ethereal plane. I loved it. Are you as high on this jam from these first five shows as I am, or am I out here on my emo island by myself here with the last 5 minutes of the song?
I like it. I liked it too.
Nice.
I was going to say also to call out from that show was a little bust out for Shaboozin and Sweet Harriet. Last time that was played was in November of 2022 as well.
One of my group texts with some friends, we were talking, and I wasn't the one who brought it up, but they actually cited this song, the Sweet Harriet, and the whole Shaboozin tonight, kind of like stage banter, as an example of how warm and just how engaging Iggy is. Their stage demeanor is so welcoming and so opening that even when, you know, they're being kind of goofy and kind of playing with the crowd a little bit, like you can tell that it's coming from a really sweet place and a really inclusive place. And yeah, the whole Shaboozin tonight had me cracking up because yeah, that was new. It was new to me. I hadn't heard it, you know, last time they played it years ago. So yeah, good call.
Oh, I did want to make a call out on there too. So at the end of set one, Jake's amp blows out. He can't play. But to me, that gives us a real great opportunity. That furthest step to me is a very special version. It's just more piano centered. Of course, I wasn't at the show, so I don't know if Jake joined over on keys or where he was at on that. But Yeah, to me it just had it was just kind of magical because the normal solo that Jake would do is replaced now by Dottie, and his keys on the on that section. So it'd be something to really check out.
I thought the three of them had a totally full band sound. It did not sound like there was a missing part. That song worked as well as a trio, you know, as it does when Jake's playing guitar. Yeah, some technical issues. At least that was
Yeah.
my impression just watching along on Instagram. I guess, yeah, we had
Yeah.
had the amp malfunction. Yeah, at the end of this set one, and then maybe I think I saw he like borrowed someone's amp in Indy. I feel like I saw a post about that on Instagram, and
Yeah, I
then
believe so.
he got one. They had a few days stopover, and went to Nashville before they jutted out to Little Rock to play their next show, which we're not going to talk about. But by then, he had gotten a new Fender amp. So, even professionals have tech issues sometimes.
Yeah, like I said, but that really creates for me, I thought it was a special moment, just like a one-off version of that song. So,
Yeah.
if anybody has the extra time, go back and listen to it. It to me is worth the while.
Very good call. The last of the five shows we're talking about is a show that you attended. Were you there with your wife?
We both went, just left that morning, drove up to Indy, saw the show, grabbed dinner beforehand. So it was all pretty nice. Stayed the night, in a nice little, I believe it's called Fountainhead, is the area that it's at in Indianapolis. So it's kind of newer bars and newer places like that, Hi-Fi being one of them. And it's super small. When I looked it up, Hi-Fi, I saw on the website, only had a capacity of 195 people. So
Whoa.
to me, I think it's pretty special because I'm always hoping for them to go bigger. You know, I never want them to have to go play there. I want them to, in Indy, to go up to the Murat Egyptian room and get a little more room for more
Yeah.
people in there. Always sound fun. Yeah, a super small, super chill crowd. Everybody is there for the right reasons. Nobody was pushing or shoving or being obnoxious. Great, great songs all over too.
And you got to talk to the band after? Did I,
I did. I kept myself real brief with them. You know, they were talking to a group and I'd kind of step in after that and just say, appreciate what you're doing. It's amazing. It means a lot to me. And shook his hand, had a good night, took a picture. So only one I didn't get him run into was Alex. I don't know where he was at, but I wasn't gonna go track him down. So it was just
Right.
whatever, whoever I naturally ran into. So
Yeah, that's really cool. And I mean, you definitely get that vibe that
yeah.
these guys are happy to chat up their fans, and you definitely fall into that category. That's great. I mean, as far as the show is concerned, I thought Time Escaping was an extra hot version. There's nothing like extraordinary about it, but very well played. And then I don't know if I had heard Gretchen before. Maybe I have, but it's been a while. But I was surprised to learn that that is obviously an original song. But I mean, that goes way back to like 2016, if not earlier than that. But great, great little instrumental. How did you feel
Yeah.
about the start of the show?
Start of the show was great at the very beginning. When the band first comes out on stage, everybody's kind of pumped up. They're getting into their places. Jake picked up his guitar and he just played the first two notes of Time Escaping. And I was like, all right, it's on. It's real. You know, it's
Yeah.
finally happening here. Gretchen, talking about how uncommon it is, it's only been played 16 times. So
Wow.
when I was kind of trying to live tweet my set list the best that I could, and that was the only one that I really tripped me up on there. I put it as yuck the first time. I don't know what made me think that way, but
Well, it's another great old song.
I just like I can't put my finger on that, you know. I even spent the and when we got back to the hotel, I spent a little bit of time going through trying to pick out some obscure songs that was like, man, what song is it? And then finally somebody told me when I saw the set list posted up for what it was. I was like, oh yeah, that's what it is.
Oh, that's funny. Well, our first highlight that we both agreed on was Tiny Miracles, and I thought that these lyrics were phenomenal. The Spirit of Trey's lyrics for Light, The 3.0 Fish song, kind of Eckhart Tolle, got to live in the moment. Otherwise, you're going to be missing out essentially on your entire existence and borrowing from the future and the past to, at the cost of the present. But I thought that it had that same kind of vibe, that zen and zest for life, live in the moment sort of philosophy to it. But in Eggy's way, they get that message across on a smaller scale, on a more personal kind of scale.
And when we were seeing it live, you know, there's that part where it's the lyric is just got to hear myself say it out loud, I'll be fine. And then they say that a couple times, but I don't know, in that room, it just felt like there were some people in there that needed to hear that they were just going to be fine. And that's, you know, everybody was singing. That was, it was just a real nice moment as a collective share on that. I'll be fine when the things get in my way.
It's really beautiful stuff. And I mean, it goes without saying, but for four guys who are around 30 years old, wise beyond their years, feel emotionally intelligent, like well beyond their years. Yeah. And that's one of the joys of being an Eggy fan, is having that wholesome, kind of generous, thankful philosophy kind of steering the ship, even if it is at an interior level that doesn't always come out on the surface. Like, you just know these guys aren't jerks. These guys really do love each other, and they're appreciative for what they have. And as a band that's on the rise, you know, I'm sure that temptation to look ahead and to hope for maybe what's down the road is probably pretty palpable for them, as they've put in so much work over the last so many years. But to have songs with lyrics like these, I feel like really grounds things. Yeah, I was all about it. I was also all about the If I Only Had a Brain tease at around 7 minutes and 30 seconds. I am a sucker. Sucker for any Wizard of Oz references in my Fish, but also in my Eggy. Just tickles me anytime I can hear that. So I love that.
Yep, I put that down on my notes too, because I skimmed back over it a couple times. I was like, I feel like I know what that is. And then I was like, oh yeah. First, I put it down as Off to Meet the Wizard. I listened to it a couple more times, and then I switched my direction to Only Have a Brain. I was like, man, I can picture it in a movie. I just don't know exactly where it was at.
Right.
And he just does it once, is the thing. He just does it one time, and that's it.
Yeah, one and done. Gets peaky around 9 minutes and 30 seconds, and just great democratic work kind of riding the circular Eggy wave as they get into the last verse and chorus. Great, great tune. Then we also agreed on Let It Rock, which is another Chuck Berry tune, you know, a la Johnny B. Goode. The shared DNA between Johnny B. Goode and Let It Rock is like pretty substantial. I'm always convinced they're about to play Johnny B. Goode, even though I know it's Let It Rock. But how did that one treat you?
It was super nice. It was natural. Of course, just Eggy's democratic peaky without showing off that we're always saying. Mike, you know, was slapping his bass is kind of the center of the first jam there at about the 5 minute mark. Jake's solo, I mean, it starts at about 9:30 and it continues up till about 11 minutes. So I just think it's great that even a artist that's beyond even classic rock is able to get pulled into their song selection and still done an eggy style. You know, it's always the great thing about these covers that they do.
Yeah, they definitely have an ability and a talent to take something and respect it, but also then twist it into something that's their own. And I got those vibes with the Democratic jamming, even as it's building and starting to wail for a few minutes at the end. And then the downshift at about 12:45 as they get ready for a silky smooth, as we would expect, segue into Finding and Losing, I thought was pretty great. Were there, so you're going to have more highlights, kind of memorable moments. Yeah. But it was Last of Ken coming up and Tom Corn Walker that you dug. Should we talk about Tom Corn Walker? What a goofy, amazing little shtick.
It's kind of like one of the jokier songs. I don't know, I don't want that to ever offend the band, but it's like Tom Corn Walker, Ricky Gervais, Onitsuka Tiger. Mm-hmm. It's just one of those, they're just fun songs, and it gets stuck in your head to the point, like, if somebody heard you sing it, they'd say, what are you talking about? You know, talking about Tom walking in his cornfields. Little Tom spent a little time in the cornfield. So yeah. We also had a guest appearance on that one as well, which is fun, which was Rufus.
Yes, everyone's favorite saxophone player.
I saw you looking at your notes going, what? Who's that? No, but yeah, Rufus showed up. That's when Donnie puts that little keyboard sound.
Yeah, his saxophone patch.
Yeah, puts that in. And then I saw somebody that had a shirt that said like Rufus on the horns or something. It was done like in a in a Dr. Seuss style. It was like a Lott shirt is what I thought it was.
Yeah, that's super cool.
On the set list, as a note, they also played Lake Monster, second song right after 12 Pounds of Pain. Talking about another rarity bust out. Lake Monster's only been played 8 times since 2019.
I had not heard it, or if I had heard it, I'd forgotten about it. But I was impressed that was an original. I kind of assume that was just some random cover from maybe some like proggy English 70s, late 70s, early 80s situation. But no, that's from the brains of the Eggy Boys. But I thought that was cool. And that's what I was alluding to when I described these shows as comfortable. When you're like digging way back into your catalog and you're just, you know, bringing stuff back, I think that does display a level of comfort with where you are and where you've been and where you're going, that just really kind of jumped off the soundboards into my ears. Yeah. We did a pretty good job of running through these 5 shows. I mean, lots of highlights. I would encourage everyone to listen to them all. But the fact that we had so many jams that we both felt definitely needed to be mentioned and sort of dissected a bit, I think is a testament to how strongly they're getting off to so far this year. But yeah, so far so good. I mentioned we have 6 shows in mid to late March. That's what we're looking at, kind of up in the Northeast, Portland, Maine, Burlington. I think they're playing a couple nights at Nectar's to start the next 6 shows.
And those are sold out, getting real low on tickets too, from my understanding.
That's what we like. That's what we like to hear. And then, Big Purim happening at Brooklyn Bowl. In fact, one of my good buddies, Ryan Storm from the Goose World and all the other podcasting and show reviewing things, he is going to be at that show on March 23rd. And I've made Ryan promise that he's going to be one of our next guests. here on Vice or Virtue. So he's heard, been to a handful of Aggie shows, but I don't think he's ever seen a two set proper show. I was just watching Ryan's Donnie Rig Rundown video on YouTube, so I could maybe like get a little more breadth of knowledge about what the heck Donnie is playing to get all the crazy sounds that he gets from his rig. So I'll put a link to that in the show notes here. Excited for what the boys have cooked up for mid to late March, and they've got a whole bunch more dates on the books in April, and you know, summer festival season will be underway before we know it. As far as our parting shot, I want to recommend the February 29th Leap Day Jam Cruise sit-in with Corey Wong, the Steely Dan cover of Green Earrings that they did. I thought that that was phenomenal. And Corey's playing his tight, rhythmic, kind of palm-muted guitar style just meshed so well with Jake's playing. And yeah, anytime Corey Wong wants to sit in with Aggie, I'm all about it. What did you want to pass along to the people for your parting shot?
My parting shot, I'm going to break the rules again, not give a word, but a person. But for this one, I have two. They're kind of my two. It's Hux 9 or 11 19 23. It's just a real bouncy dance party, just leading the way. And then also, when people ask what's my favorite jam to give out, normally it's Shells 8 25 23. It's just a fast-paced jam, and composition just blends together well with the song itself. So
I'll put those in the show notes as well, just to help people find them. I will say a little bit of a tease here. Another fish nerd, music nerd, life nerd buddy of mine, Brian Brinkman. At some point, he and I are going to go back and talk about the shows from the first couple weeks of May 2023. Brian suggested those shows because he said they were a real high point, and that was right as I was starting to listen to Aggie but not taking notes. So I'm excited to revisit them from a nerdier perspective, but we're going to go through some of the highlights of the first half of May 2023, because, to put it in Brian's words, the last best shows they played before everybody started paying attention to Aggie. So I'm excited to get into those details. But thanks everyone for listening to episode 3 of Vice or Virtue. Brian, thanks so much for being a phenomenal guest. People can connect with you on Mastodon, on Shakedown Social. You're just at Brian. And you're always posting great Aggie content. It's much appreciated. Folks want to subscribe to Vice or Virtue, leave a review. Probably the most helpful thing is pass this episode or any episode along to a friend who would be into Aggie or is into Aggie. You can connect with me on Instagram. I've got a Vice or Virtue pod account on Mastodon. I'm just Justin Bruce, and you'll see me nerding out with Brian and Al W and all the other Aggie folks over on Mastodon. And you can always email me Vice or Virtue and Aggie pod at gmail.com. Brian, anything you want to say to the folks as we wrap things up? You are a phenomenal guest for your first podcast of your entire life. When are you starting your own podcast? You crushed it.
I don't know. Who knows? We'll see what happens in the future. But no, it was a real honor to be asked to come on, and I appreciate it more than you know. And hopefully we can sit down and do it again here in a couple episodes later.
That sounds phenomenal. I look forward to it. Anytime Aggie comes through the Midwest, through your little corner of the world, you're the guy on the streets who we need to hear from. So thank you very much for making time. And thanks everyone for listening. Have a great rest of your day. Just the kicker.